something I just happened to come across online. And, you know, when you have pretty consistent assignments to speak, you're always looking for ideas. You're always looking for something that you can use to structure a message around. So I came across something and thought, you know, this would be a really good message, you know, good theme for a message. So I started working on it and put it together. So don't think that I'm talking to anybody here. More so, I'm probably talking to myself. So, as most people that speak do. But in any case, the scriptures tell us that a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. The same book that has that scripture in it has many examples of when we should refrain from speaking. We will be reading a lot of those scriptures today, and they come out of the book of Proverbs and other scriptures that contain relevant examples for this topic. When you look into the book of Proverbs, many times you see the words, "my son." And much of it is written as a father advising his son. And in that way, I think it's an excellent book for younger people to read, but for each one of us, we all have a father. Whether we have one that's living or not, we have a father in heaven. And he speaks to us through these verses. Let's go look at James 3 to begin. James chapter 3, we'll start reading in verse 2 to talk about the tongue. We can't really talk about the topic of speaking or not speaking without covering these verses. James chapter 3 and verse 2, James writes, "For we all stumble in many things." Yes, as much as we like to think we're perfect, we do stumble in many things. "If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body." So he's saying here, and it's an interesting thought, if you can control your tongue, you can pretty much control your body, which is an interesting thought. "Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships. Though they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men, who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so." So James here recognizes the great harm that the tongue can cause, and at the same time, the great good that it can be used for. The words that we speak can have good effects, or they can be evil and poisonous. James, of course, is recommending here that we don't use words to cause harm to other people, to our friends, to our family. The fact here that he presents, it is hard to control the tongue. If we are in control of our tongue, as he said, we're in control of our whole body, which is an interesting idea because so many times we have so much in this society where we're trying to control everything about our bodies. We're trying to control how much we eat, how much we drink, how much sleep we get, how much exercise we get. And James says, well, if you can control this little thing in your mouth, your tongue, you can control all that other stuff. We've all said things that we regret and wish we could pull back. I'm sure everybody in this room, I would be stunned if no one had something that they regret allowing to come out of their mouths. There's times where we just need to be quiet. There are times when we just need to, in the common vernacular, shut up. Even the book of Proverbs tells us that a foolish person appears to be wise when they don't speak. If you want to write that down, that's Proverbs 17, verse 28. Proverbs 17, 28. So we have to be careful about what we say, but there's also times when it's best for us to not say anything. So let's go through some times, some examples, some points from Scripture when it is best not to speak. Number one, when you're angry. When you are angry. Proverbs 14, verse 17. Proverbs 14, verse 17. A quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man of wicked intentions is hated. So when we're angry, we tend to maybe lash out and maybe allow words to come out of our mouths that are not what we would have wanted to say. Maybe things that have been repressed, things that we should have thrown out of our minds a long time ago, but they're still there. James writes this in his book, again, back to the book of James, James 1:19, just write this down, I'll read it. He says, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath." And there's a common saying, I've heard it said many times, we have two ears and one mouth. So obviously God wanted us to listen more than we talk. And when we're angry, we need to be careful of what we say. Let's look at a couple of examples on this. Numbers chapter 20. Numbers chapter 20. We're breaking into the story here. The nation of Israel has been testing the patience of Moses and Aaron for a number of months, time after time. They've come and complained, and at one point they wanted to stone them. And in this case, they come because they don't have water. And so God instructs them of what to do. Verse 7 of Numbers 20, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron gather the congregation together, speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock and give drink to the congregation and their animals.' So Moses took the rod before the Lord as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly before the rock, and he said to them," now listen to what he says. Do you think that this is what God wanted him to say? Or is it coming from his anger? "He said to them, 'Hear now, you rebels. Must we bring water for you out of this rock?' Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly. And the congregation and their animals drank." So he speaks out of his anger. And then he doesn't follow what God says. He strikes the rock. "Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron." And this was a pretty serious incident in both of their lives. "Because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them." So just this one act out of his anger disqualified Moses and Aaron from going into the promised land. Now there's many other factors involved, but this was one of the reasons they were not allowed to go in. Let's go to Psalm 106 and read a little commentary in the scriptures itself on this incident. Psalm 106, verse 32. Psalm 106, 32. The psalmist writes, "They angered him," speaking of the children of Israel, "they angered him also at the waters of strife, so that it went ill with Moses on account of them, because they rebelled against his spirit, so that he spoke rashly with his lips." This was a time when Moses should have not spoken as he spoke. I'm sure that God probably had something in mind for him to say when he said, "Speak to the rock." But it was not this. It was not, "Must we bring water for you out of this rock?" Another time, we have to be careful of what we say, is if we don't have all the facts. If we don't have all the facts on something, we should be hesitant to say or make some kind of a judgment or statement on something. Proverbs 18, verse 13. Proverbs 18, verse 13. "He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him." So if you speak on something, if you make a decision, before you have all the facts, it can be foolish. It can cause shame. So don't be quick to make a decision until you've heard everything, until you've heard both sides in most cases. Remember the incident of King Solomon with the two women that came before him. And this was a case of where both sides came and they spoke. Both sides said, "This is my child." The other woman. She rolled over and killed her baby. So Solomon thought, okay, it's two people claiming this live baby. Bring a sword and cut the baby in half. And he cut right down to the essential truth there, didn't he? That the mother, the real mother, did not want that to happen. And said, "Give this child to the other woman." And so he figured it out really quick. Joseph, remember the case of Joseph and the wife of Potiphar. Do you think Potiphar got all the facts? The story doesn't seem to indicate that. The story seems to indicate that there was a lot of circumstantial evidence brought against Joseph. And Potiphar believed his wife and that circumstantial evidence and didn't get all the facts, even though really there were so many things staring him in the face, that here is this servant that had served him for so many years and nothing had happened. His house had been immensely blessed under his stewardship. And then why would Joseph do this? Why would Joseph do this kind of thing? Let's go read another example in the book of Esther. Esther chapter 3. Esther chapter 3, and we're breaking into the story here, but the king of Persia got into a situation where he didn't, I don't think, get all the facts. He didn't understand at what he was doing here. And in verse 10 of chapter 3, this is after Haman came to him and multiple times convinced him that he wanted to destroy a certain group of people out of his empire. So the king took a signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. And the king said to Haman, "The money and the people are given to you, to do with them as seems good to you." Then the king's scribes were called on the 13th day of the first month, and a decree was written according to all that Haman commanded, to the king's satraps, to the governors, officials of all people, to every province. So they wrote out that they sent out this proclamation to every people in the name of King Ahasuerus, and that's a tongue twister. I had to go look up and give a little guide on pronouncing that, but that's a long one. It was written, and it was sealed with the king's ring. And so they sent out all these letters to all the provinces that they would have this opportunity to destroy the Jewish people. Then Queen Esther got involved at the bequest of her uncle. And as I said, the king didn't have all the facts. He didn't understand that this was going to affect his wife, the queen. Esther chapter 7 and verse 3. The queen invites the king and Haman to several banquets and is gearing up to ask the king something. And verse 3 of Esther 7, it says, "Then Queen Esther answered and said, 'If I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the Lord, let my life be given me at my petition and my people at my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss.'" So here, the king is seeing another side of this, that is going to affect his beloved queen, that he's also going to lose quite a segment of his population that is going to hurt the empire. So the king answered and said to Queen Esther, "Who is he and where is he who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing?" So he had no idea that it was affecting the queen. And Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman." So the king did not have all the facts when he granted this request to Haman. God put Esther in a position which allowed her to give the king the other side of the story, that her and her family would be destroyed. Another time when we should be careful about our words and maybe not speak. Let me open this so I can see what my time is. Okay. When you are tempted to joke about sin. When you are tempted to joke about sin. This is something that happens a lot in the society around us, and it's easy for us to fall into it. Proverbs 14:9. If you want to just jot it down, I'll read it to you. Fools mock at sin, but among the upright there is favor. To mock something is to ridicule, scorn, deride, jeer, or scoff at it. To mock sin is to make light of it, to make a joke about it, to not be serious about the topic. There was an expression, and this goes back, how far back does this go? Seems like 10 to 12 years in my life. I remember, and I don't know how popular it was. I know it was popular in my vernacular. And the expression that a lot of people were using, and I used it as well, was, "Let's not and say we did." Does anybody remember that? It used to be people would go around and say that. "Let's not and say we did." And I used that for quite a while. And then I started to think, what am I saying? I'm saying let's lie, right? Yeah. Let's not and say that we did. Yeah. And a lot of times we would use that where we were making light of sin. We were making light of doing something wrong. But it was something that just crept in to the expressions that a lot of people would use. And you had to think about it. It took me some time to realize I really shouldn't be using that expression. And I stopped it. I took it out of my vocabulary. Stopped using it. Proverbs 10, verse 23. Proverbs 10, verse 23, to do evil is like sport to a fool, but a man of understanding has wisdom. So we have many examples of that we should not make light of sin. We have, like I said, our society around us does it all the time. Right? We have all these different shows that are basically just parading sin and making light of it, parading people hurting each other. And that's entertainment. That's entertainment now. Another time that we should be careful of what we say, and maybe not say anything, is when you're tempted to lie. When you're tempted to lie. Proverbs 4, verse 24. I'm going to read this from the Complete Jewish Bible. Proverbs 4:24 says, keep crooked speech out of your mouth. Banish deceit from your lips. And it's so easy, isn't it, to do this? If you're in a situation that might make you look bad, your first instinct is to lie. Your first instinct is to try to deflect, right? Deflect the criticism, deflect the blame away. We've all done it. I've done it. It's easy. It's easy to fall into. But God instructs us to banish deceit. It's interesting in the context of this verse, the verse right before it in Proverbs 4, the verse right before verse 24 reads this, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. So we go from that verse directly to banish deceit from your lips. We know that God takes lying very seriously. At the very end of the Bible, he mentions lying. Let's go to Revelation 22. Revelation 22, verse 14. This is at the very end. We're close to the very end of the book here. In verse 14, it reads, blessed are those who do his commandments, that they may have the right to the tree of life and may enter through the gates into the city. But outside are dogs and sorcerers and sexually immoral and murderers and idolaters and whoever loves and practices a lie. So it was important enough that at the very end even, God points this out. Stay away from lying. It's better not to speak. Now, some people might make an inference, won't they? They ask you a question and maybe you don't want to give the answer. And maybe they'll infer something, but it's better that they do that than that you lie, right? Paul instructed the church to stay away from this practice. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25, if you want to take this down. Ephesians 4, 25. We're told this, therefore putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. So corrupt and foul talk, lying to others, betrays an evil heart. We are commanded to put aside falsehood, corrupt talk, slander, malice, any kind of words that will lead to a falsehood. So if you are thinking of lying, better not to speak. That's a time not to speak. Another time that we should be careful to speak, and this is something else that happens so much in our society around us, is if your words will damage someone's reputation. if what you say will damage another person's reputation, and you know it, and it doesn't need to be said, it doesn't need to happen, it doesn't need to come out of your mouth. Proverbs 16:27. I should have told you to just leave a marker in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 16:27. An ungodly man digs up evil, and it is on his lips like a burning fire. And one of the commentaries on this verse writes this: the symbolism presented in this verse is significant, as it uses the imagery of digging up evil and a burning fire to convey the pervasive and destructive nature of ungodliness. I have a wood-burning stove in my living room at home, and when that fire is hot and going, it's very, very pervasive. As you say, you open the door of that thing and put anything flammable into there, and it's on fire immediately. So this image of a burning fire, it conveys the pervasive and destructive nature of ungodliness. The act of digging up evil, continuing the quote, suggests a deliberate and intentional seeking out of wickedness, while the metaphor of a burning fire in the lips conveys the destructive power of their words. This symbolism serves to underscore the insidious and harmful nature of unrighteous behavior and the potential consequences it can have. So if you have something, let's say you know something, you know about something in somebody's past, it doesn't matter right now. It doesn't matter. The person has changed, they've grown. There's no need for anyone else to know about it, just because you know it. There's no need for anyone else to know. Remember when Joseph was in Egypt and his brothers came? He had never told the Pharaoh about what his brothers had done to him. He just said that he had been kidnapped and taken to Egypt. He'd never put down his brothers. And he could have, he had many opportunities to do that. Many years went by. Today in this society, as I mentioned, we have a whole industry that's set around us, don't we? We have the media that's constantly looking for something evil, something bad that they can get on somebody and report it to the world. We have what's called the paparazzi, right? That these photographers that are constantly trying to get a picture of a famous person in maybe some compromising pose or some compromising position, or maybe they're with somebody other than their significant other, right? And, oh, we can start up a rumor mill of what's going on here, what's happening with this. There's an insatiable appetite for this. They will go and dig up somebody's background. They'll go and find a neighbor that they lived next door to 20 years ago or whatever it might be, right? Just trying to figure out if there's, can we find something on this person to make them look bad? To make people, you know, downgrade them a little bit, downgrade their reputation. They enjoy this. They enjoy destroying the peace and the reputations of others. The word that's used in this verse, the ungodly man, the Hebrew there is the word Belial. The meaning of that word is worthless, good for nothing, wicked. If we are using our words in this manner, we are aligning ourselves with ungodly and worthless individuals. I think we have time for one more. And this is sort of related to the last one. If your words will destroy a friendship, it's better not to speak. It's better not to say anything. Psalms 15 and verse 3. If I remember correctly, this psalm is only five verses long, and it's about who can dwell in God's house. And in verse 3 of this, we read this: "He who does not slander with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his neighbor." The Hebrew word here for slander is the Hebrew word ragal, R-A-G-A-L, which can mean to go about as a talebearer or to spy. In the ancient context, slander was not just a personal offense, but a communal one, as it could disrupt the harmony and trust within a community. So the purpose of this is that we do not want to use our words to raise up any kind of scandalous report on another person. And it also says that we will be hesitant also to listen to a scandalous report on another person. We will not want to hear about scandal on another person. So this is someone, if you avoid this, if you avoid doing this, it's someone who does not injure with words, who does not pointlessly or unjustifiably speak evil of anyone. And it's easy to do, isn't it? It's easy to throw out a snide comment, a hurtful comment about somebody else, because it's so relevant, it's so common around us. It's so common around us. Now, I'm not saying if you're really, really good friends with somebody, and I know there's some people here that are like this, you've grown up with them, and maybe someone else that comes along that doesn't know may hear you trash talking each other and think, wow, how in the world are they allowing them to speak to them like that? And it's just because they have an understanding, and they know that all of it is just all in fun. There's nothing serious at all about it. Another time when it is best to not speak is when it is time to listen. There are times we're told that it's better for us to listen than to speak. Proverbs 19 in verse 20. Proverbs 19 in verse 20. "Listen to counsel and receive instruction, that you may be wise in your latter days." As I already said, we have two ears and one mouth, so let's use more of our ears when it is time to learn, when it is time to listen. The word for listen in that verse that we just read is the word shema, S-H-E-M-A. And the intention of this word is listening with the intent to obey. So not just listening to hear what another person says, but listening with the intent to obey what you hear. So there is value in listening to other people and not always feeling like you have to jump in and have something to say. Because you may not have anything to say. I mean, if you want to talk to me about a vehicle, for instance, about working on a vehicle, I will have very little to say because I have hardly any knowledge. I have a little bit of hard-won experiential knowledge, but I don't have any, like I couldn't tell you how many liters an engine is and all this. You know, some people can just rattle this stuff off. They know all the ins and outs. They know exactly how to tear down something. But when I'm around somebody like that, I stay quiet because I know I'm going to learn more just by listening than saying anything. A lot of times when I'm around Larry, and he's not here with us today, maybe he's watching us, when I'm around Larry, I do a lot of listening because there's a lot of wealth of knowledge that he has, not only about just life, but farming, raising animals. He's raised so many different kinds of animals, it's amazing. He has a wealth of knowledge. And so I enjoy listening when I'm with Larry. Well, we have seen today the importance of knowing when it's best that we don't say anything, when it's best that we don't speak. At times, we can say things that's detrimental to others, that's even sinful. So let's be mindful. Let's be mindful of the situations where we need to be in control of our tongue, when it is better to be quiet and stay silent.